The fiscal 2015 budget request from the White House is an attempt to build an evidence-based way to run the federal government. That budget includes provisions to boost spending on programs that we already know work and to pay to research to find ones that don't work and stop funding them. Steve Kelman's professor of public management at the Harvard Kennedy School of Government. He joins me and my co-host this afternoon, Karen Evans. Steve, this is something that you write in your Electron blog that you think people are missing and you can't figure out why. Have you come up with any possible scenarios since you wrote the piece, Steve?
Well, the scenario for why is it's not sexy. It's not very partisan. In fact, I found out that this was in the budget, this section about evidence-based government in President Obama's budget. I found out about it when my good Republican friend Robert Shea, who headed performance measurement under the previous President Bush, wrote about this. He is a Republican in a very positive way on his Facebook page, where I think he said something like it was bringing, this is what Moneyball would look like in government, and he was very positive towards it. So you got this thing, you know, in our atmosphere in Washington right now, if there's something that goes over party lines, people say this is boring.
You remember Robert Shea, don't you, Karen?
Oh, of course I do. Actually,
have you worked with him, right?
Yeah, he did work with him, and I read Steve's piece, and I saw Robert's posting on Facebook, and I agree with Steve. It's a lot of times things that everybody agrees upon and that you could move forward and that is good government, it doesn't play well in the press, and so it gets missed.
Yeah, I mean, people pay attention to the stuff that people are yelling at each other about and so forth. I mean, one of the interesting things about this idea of evidence-based government, that's the term that's used, is it has friends across party lines, so Steve Kelman likes it, and Karen Evans likes it, and Robert Shea likes it. It also has enemies across party lines, because some of the Democrats, and, you know, as people know, I'm a Democrat, some of the Democrats are worried, well, if you actually require or look for some evidence that these programs work, maybe there is no evidence, maybe they don't work, and maybe you'd cut them. And so some Democrats don't like that. Some Republicans don't like the idea of letting these sort of pointy-head professors do academic research and letting government be influenced by what folks are doing in academia. So it has bipartisan friends and bipartisan skeptics.
So what do we do to convert more people to the bipartisan friends coalition?
I guess two things. One is, and as somebody pointed out in a comment to my blog, actually, Francis, this is a little bit slightly different from what you said in your lead-in. If you look at the president's budget and the section on evidence-based government, all the examples are looking for things that work and should be funded more. There's nothing in it about we found these things that didn't work and they should be funded less. There was something of a tendency at the same time when the Republicans were in, when they talked about evidence-based, to come up with, here are things that don't work, we're going to cut them. So I think one thing substantively that both sides need to do is to take the spirit of evidence-based government, which is some version of, you know, let the chips fall where they may, and be willing to use it both if we find evidence of success to increase our commitment, and if we find evidence of failure to cut back or eliminate. So that's one thing. Second, nobody is saying that a bunch of research studies by professors should control what's going on in the government. But at the same time, I think there's a very, very widespread view. And again, I saw it a little bit in some of the comments to the blog that came from people who I think clearly were not normal blog readers. I don't know where, you know, they saw it on the internet somewhere. They're just sort of folks, let's say, that I think a lot of people out there in our country are upset about this. Everything is looked at through partisan lenses. Everything is a way to have a fight and so forth. And one of the things that can make the idea of evidence-based government more appealing, and I think maybe the advocates of evidence-based government should be emphasizing more than we are, is this is a way a little bit to de-ideologize and de-demonize politics.
Senator Coburn has advocated for a complete inventory of all programs that all agencies do and he's introduced legislation, and it's gone nowhere fast. And Steve, it sounds to me like, at least for now, the bipartisan coalition against evidence-based governing is in control, because it would seem to me knowing what every agency does would be the first step toward figuring out what evidence you needed to determine whether it worked or not.
Yeah, I mean, I think the coalition against evidence-based is winning mainly, they're not succeeding in fighting off the idea of let's base more of these decisions on what the evidence shows. I think they're just caught in their ideological ruts and are just yelling at each other. I think probably the idea of evidence-based government, as the lack of press coverage of this section of the budget indicates, suffers more from neglect and people just ignoring it than people attacking it.
Karen, this all requires data. Do you have a sense that the data stream is strong enough and clean enough? And when I say strong enough, I don't mean raw data, because there's no question agencies have tons of that. But analytically, are the agencies able to process it enough to be able to get the information that they need to apply to these programs?
So we've been moving in this direction. This is why we brought up Robert Shea, and you talked about all the programs, and we went forward under the program assessment rating tool, the PAR program. And it was, you know, Steve, to your point, there were pros and cons and whether it was good or whether it was bad. But there's a couple things that you said. One is, do you have data? So the quality of the data now becomes a big issue when you're trying to do evidence-based. So you want to get good quality data because you're going to be making more decisions on those. But there's the other flip side of all of this. So I'm going to be the contrarian, and this is what I talk about when I'm teaching down at the Office of Personnel Management, is you want to get to more evidence-based, data-driven decisions because it removes the emotion out of it. And so then you are talking about, is it working, is it not working? So if your evidence uncovers a program that is not working, the automatic assumption should not be that it's automatically going to get cut, because if it's a priority for the president or for the secretary, and it's an important program that's also a priority for the Hill, then what you may have to do is shift resources from other programs that may be working but not to the extent, and put it into the program that needs to shore up the resources, because you now have evidence that shows what we initially tried isn't working, but this is important because the outcome is important.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have to shift it because we all agree on that outcome. So let's put resources over here because what we're currently doing is not working. And so a lot of what I try to describe, Francis, to your point, is we're at the point now where agencies have to talk and say, do you want us to do 9 programs, you know, or 10 programs at 80%, or do 5 programs at 100%? And you can't make that argument unless you have data-driven evidence base to provide to senior leadership so that they can make that call.
Karen, one point I'd add to what you say, and sort of in the same spirit, is when you say working or not working, a lot of times these programs look very different in different locations, and you can't make a generalization. So it's not the right question to ask, for example, does Head Start work or doesn't it work? There is an enormous variation of things that are actually done in classes that are under this name, Head Start. Some of them work, some of them don't. And one of the benefits, I think, of developing an evidence base is to figure out what versions of Head Start work, what versions don't work, so then we can redirect resources from the kinds of Head Start interventions, for example, that do work, and the kind of Head Start interventions that don't work. There's no such thing as Head Start. Head Start is a lot of different programs.
Well, and I agree with you, and I think, to Francis's point, is that the data will allow for that differentiation to happen. But right now, everybody bases it on, here's the overall high-level intuition. It looks like it's working, and then
mm-hmm.
here are the gross numbers. And therefore, you have an emotional discussion over something versus really looking at a data-driven discussion about, okay, we want this outcome. This stream is working. These particular things in this pocket, right? And so this is where, for instance, and this is where we get a lot of these, oh, let's apply the lessons learned, or pockets of innovation, and all these other things, because you have groups that have implemented well. So how do you collect that and then share it out with other people? And it could be resources. It could be a bunch of other things. But you need the data in order to be able to highlight it, highlight that and get the decisions made.
I'll just add one point, too, that I think was right on about our friend Robert's observation, and that is since the book Moneyball came out, 50 million different people have said, well, this is what Moneyball for whatever fill in the blank would look like. And they didn't really get the point of the book. The point of the book was, and the point of what the baseball team did in that book, was to look for value in particular areas, to look for places where other people were undervaluing something that was really worthwhile and devoting resources to it. And that's why Robert nailed it with this Moneyball analogy where most people miss it seems to me.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I think one of the interesting things about the success of the book and the movie Moneyball takes an area that a lot of people are, you know something about and care about and so forth. I do think it's a good metaphor, particularly if done correctly the way you're suggesting we do it, for saying here is a proven technique that if we can apply it in government, whether it be, and there are these sort of two separate worlds in government and they shouldn't be separate. One is the evidence-based world, which is a lot of these very long-term expensive studies, and the other is the performance measurement world, which is much more short-term. I like to see those two worlds come much closer together, and the Moneyball idea applies to both of them. And in both cases, both the kind of long-term research studies of effectiveness and evidence-based and the shorter-term performance measurement apply the or show ways to apply the kind of approach that successfully was used in Moneyball to try to improve the performance of government.
Steve, we're just about out of time, but I want to make sure that people understand that they should, when they go to federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, they'll find a link to this blog post of yours about evidence-based government, but they should read your blog on an ongoing basis because we learn things about you through the blog that are fascinating. I had no idea you were such an ABBA fan. Steve loves ABBA, Karen. And so,
I grew up with that, a lot of that music. I like it, too. I can't say it.
Well, Steve, it's great to talk to you, as always, my friend. And thank you for this. And we'll link to it later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.